Welcome to The Influential Nonprofit, the show for nonprofit leaders to grow their influence so they can grow their income and impact. Now here's your host, Marianne Dersch.
Hey, welcome to another episode of The Influential Nonprofit. I have a wonderful guest this week and I'm so excited, but first I will tell you who I am in case you don't know. I'm Marianne. My company is Courageous Communication and I work with nonprofit leaders to master the art of influence so they can ask for and receive all they want, need, and deserve without feeling ineffective, rejected, or pushy. And I actually Dan, and I'm just going to introduce you to me, is that I help nonprofit leaders understand how their thoughts and feelings contribute to their everyday decision-making so they can be more conscious leaders and actually get what they want. And I'm here with Dan Johnson with Next Level Nonprofits. And I feel like we're going to have a fantastic conversation and we're best friends already. Okay. And I made best friends. Everybody's on this podcast, but we're going to talk about the fears of breaking through our fears of fundraising. And I think this has more of an impact that people want to realize or really want to believe that their fears can really play more of a role than they believe. And I'm going to set you up and then I'm going to set this conversation up. Okay. So Dan is a four-time nonprofit founder. You're a former impact evaluator, nonprofit coach. You grew your first nonprofit to 10,000 volunteers nationwide in 3 years. Darn, man. And you created federal and state policy change on numerous issues. You've been featured all kinds of places, the Nonprofit Communications Report, CNN, the Chicago Tribune. And so let's just say you know what you're talking about. Status achieved, status unlocked. And I want to share that in my work, what I find is that people want strategy. If I had the right tool, I would feel better. If I had the right script, I would feel better. If I had just this thing, then that would give me confidence. And it's actually the opposite, right? And that, I'm saying this first because I want a foundation for my mindset so I can tap into yours. That we build our confidence, we understand what limitations and barriers we need to work through. And then from that place, we create the tool or find the tool or whatever. That's what I do. And so Dan, tell me what you do.
Well, what I primarily focus on is I help new nonprofit leaders get their first $250,000. But a big part of that, the first dollars are always the hardest, is basically what I would say. And we focus on the first dollars. But a big part of that is mindset changing and is mindset shift. And I'll give an example. So the first nonprofit that I ran, the People Against the NDAA, that was the nonprofit. We had 10,000 volunteers by the end of 3 years. You know, really great at creating these volunteer teams, really terrible at fundraising. And I think in the first year, now I was pretty young, we were running this. And so I had like my dad's Delta airline pass and that allowed me to go all over the country for free. And then I like stayed in people's houses. And so I was pretty frugal. But we only raised like 3K in the first year of the organization. We only raised like 10 in the second year of the organization. And the mindset that I had had was asking for money is icky, basically, and or very hard. We're always passive, and like people happen to be on the website and they saw our thing and they donated and it was cool. And there was no follow up, no nothing, like a lot of nonprofits. And somebody sat me down at one point and they said, Dan, you ask people all the time for their time. You have no regrets about asking people for their time. And time is irreplaceable. Once people give you their time, They're not getting it back. That's it. And you're not going to ask for money. Money's replaceable. They can get money back. You're asking them for something irreplaceable and they're giving it to you. And you're not asking for something that's replaceable and they could just give it to you. Why don't you start asking for money? And that mindset shift there that I had, that I was actually doing a harder thing, which was asking people to give up their time and their energy and their attention to what I'm doing. And all I had to do was just ask for money, had me start fundraising, and my next nonprofit, we raised quite a bit more money.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If you remember the book, The Soul of Money by Lynn Twist. Okay. So it's not a book about fundraising. It's a book about money and our relationship to money and not having money control us, but having us set the meaning and the purpose and the conditions for money. But she was a fundraiser. And so it's very interesting for fundraisers to read this book because it's meaningful on a whole nother level. She was what's called the World Hunger Relief Project. She was an amazing fundraiser. And I can encourage anybody who has anything to do to read this book, audiobook, whatever. It completely shifted. But one of the things she says is like, money isn't a stagnant pond. Money, there's a flow, right? There's always more resources. And that's one of the things I tell myself all the time. There's always more money. There'll be more money. You know, like the unexpected, you know, bill hits or whatever. And you're like, they'll just, because there's always more money. When hasn't there, you know, like, it may not be like in the form you want it or whatever, but there's the money is the flow. And like, so when we allow it, when we treat money like a stagnant, like it becomes stagnant, right? So the flow of money is letting it go so we can let more come in. But if we keep it, it just grows stale. In a sense of like what you were saying, it's the same thing. You're just using different language, which is like, I don't believe time's infinite or like, anyway, I have feelings about our relationship to time too, which we're not going to get in because it gets really wooey. But you know, there's a flow. There's a flow of money and it's always, yeah, they'll have more money, you know, but they'll never be this day or this moment again. I absolutely love that. I think that is a huge perspective shift. And obviously that worked for you. Okay. One thing that I didn't ask you, I usually start this podcast asking somebody what you're really proud of but you don't get to brag about a lot. And so I want to ask you that question. It doesn't have to be related to this. It doesn't have to be related to anything at all. I imagine that part of that might be part of something, you know, like, but tell me something that you're really proud of that you don't get to brag about a lot.
Wow, that is a fantastic question. And
thank you very much.
if I didn't have 2 hours of sleep, it'd be a lot easier to answer. I think, you know what? I think that something I'm really proud of that I don't get to brag a lot about is my wife. And I really don't get to brag about her a lot because she's not in the nonprofit space. But she was a nanny of 10 years, and we have 2 kids and we have 1 on the way. And I know nothing about raising children other than how my parents raised me. And she knows an incredible amount about raising children.
And she was a professional. Yeah.
Yes. Cause I lucked out is what happened. And she really taught me a lot about myself. The first question that she ever asked was literally the first question that she asked once we got to know each other was, she turned to me, we were on a work trip together, and she turned to me and goes, "So how do you feel shame?" And I went, "What? How do I feel shame?" She said, "Well, do you react to it and blame other people? Do you blame yourself when you feel like other people don't like you? How do you react to that?" And even what she taught me is something that nonprofit leaders can learn a lot from, which is, each person we interact with, each person we engage with, they have a particular set of ways that they feel about things, that they react. You know, my wife has purple hair. She does not handle shame by blaming herself. She handles shame by blaming other people. And as you work with people longer and you start to look at things like their, you know, this is the Enneagram that she was talking about, but you start to look at some of these systems, you start to get really better at understanding people. It gets a lot easier to manage volunteers because you're always trying to understand them. So in a roundabout way, I think I'm really proud of her, the work she's done, and of being able to learn this fact that it's not just, oh, you talk in emotions and you talk in facts to different people. It's how people process those things, and getting to know them and getting to really understand a couple of these systems makes you a better people manager. It makes you better engaging with people around you.
That is 100%. I run a course. It's called Uplevel Your Influence. And that's exactly what I teach people to do, is understand themselves, how they show up as a leader, how they think, what their strengths are. And then next is like how we understand and process through others. And there's, like you said, there's all kinds of different systems and ways of doing this. What really understanding like what's going on beneath, because the presenting problem is hardly ever the actual problem, right? And when the board says, getting back to this conversation, when the board says, oh, if we had a brochure, we could fundraise, and then everybody runs off and makes them a brochure and nothing happens because it wasn't the brochure. Brochure is a physical manifestation of something that they're afraid of messing up, or they're afraid of saying the wrong thing. And that comes from, you already said the word shame, guilt or shame. Shame is that we don't like who we are. Guilt is what we don't like what we do. And guilt and shame drives almost every fear drives there, because we will do anything not to feel those things. So rejection, the vulnerability for asking for help, all the things that come with fundraising and money. I call it the trifecta of pain, because it's money, which is already charged. It's the vulnerability of asking for help and the possibility of rejection. Like that's a guilt, shame tornado, you know, getting activated. And if you don't understand what's happening, that these are just biological responses conditioned into you, and that you can actually navigate them, then you will not do those things. You might do it once, you might get up enough and do it, but if it goes wrong, you'll probably never do it again. But there are ways that we can understand what's actually happening, and or knowing the questions to ask to help people come understand for themselves, come to more awareness of themselves, of what's really happening, so that we can actually deal with the problem. I had somebody tell me a long time ago, I was hoping to avoid the drama. And I'm like, let's just reshape that story, because it's actually not drama. It's real feelings of that people have. This was not about fundraising. This was about a board that like had a huge conflict, and they were going to it was a mess. And I'm like, people want to be seen and heard. It's not drama. It's important that we process the pain, that we process the feelings, so we can get on the other side of them and actually get some crap done. Right. And I know you've probably seen good organizations go bad, good people leave, just because they could not navigate something like this.
You know, one of my favorite tools for navigating something like this, and, you know, as a man, I had to be taught that feelings existed. So we
except
had to start
anger,
there.
Which you don't even think is a feeling.
That's true. It's not a feeling. It's just being manly.
Your sports team wins. Let's flip a car, man.
Your sports team loses. Let's flip a car. I mean, it's always a good day for flipping a car.
And they're like, men break the TV, and we're the emotional ones. You've seen women throw the TV out the window when their team loses. That's okay, because it's anger. Okay, I'm going to stop now.
No, you're good. You're good. So, you know, it does take a lot to think through, you know, what are the emotions that are holding you back as a person? Because in so many ways, I mean, I think Leila Hormozi was talking about this, the emotions that we have are probably our biggest barrier as people who are looking to build nonprofits, who are looking to build effective teams. And, you know, one of the most, so I was in a high stakes negotiation this morning. One of my clients has a bigger nonprofit that is not operating within the value set of the nonprofit sector and is attempting to take some of their stuff. And, you go into a meeting like that, and that's really intense. There's a lot of people who are looking to be served. There's a lot of stuff on the line. And what you want to do is you want to just go after them. How dare they? Why would you bother? Why would you do this? And there was a tool that I learned when I was a trainer that is the Arbinger Institute's. We'll call it the box. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. So basically, the box is a thought exercise that you go through to help yourself deal with conflict with a person. And how it works, I'll summarize it briefly, but how it works is you sit down and you write down, how have I acted? And then you write down, how have they acted? And then you write down, how did their actions make me feel? And then you write down, how did my actions make them feel? And the goal of this exercise is you come out in the end and you go, they might actually have a legitimate position that they're coming from here. They might actually have a legitimate claim, and it makes your interactions, it makes your engagement with this person genuine, instead of seeing them as an obstacle or seeing them as someone who is just a tool to get what you want. You're seeing them as a person. You cannot hide when they don't always know like why, but they'll come away with a bad feeling if you go into a conversation, into a conflict, thinking bad about them. It'll come across in your tone. It'll come across in your body language.
And I always say it, energy speaks louder than words, right? Even if your words are pleasant, if your energy is negative, our subconscious is so powerful. It's so smart. It picks up on that right away. And even if you're not conscious of it, there's something about you that's interpreting it subconsciously.
Exactly. And so, using a tool like like the Arbinger Institute, there's a, they describe it in a fantastic book, which is my best, my favorite business books are all written like novels. So you actually read a character instead of, you know, read a bunch of facts. And they explain this through, you know, numerous scenarios in there. But that tool of just sitting down, and it only takes me like 30 seconds. I don't even write it down half the time. But like, I, on behalf of my client, was so angry at this organization. My client, not particularly fond of this organization. We go in and we came, we estimated about a 10% chance of success. We came in with that mindset. We came in centering that other organization and what they wanted and what they needed and what their experience was. And I won't say it's a complete victory, but we came out of there with a lot more than we would have. And it's just a, like a David and Goliath doesn't even begin to describe it kind of situation. And so it is a lot of recognizing that everyone is driven by both feelings and thoughts, including you. And if you don't get your own feelings and thoughts under control and understand what they are and understand where you want them to go, it's going to come across and it's going to make your relationships harder, whether that's fundraising, whether that's volunteers, whether that's your board, whatever it is. Now, there are a lot of fundamental structural problems with nonprofits, including how boards are designed, that amplify personal conflicts. But there's still, you can work it out if you have this idea that there's a whole human being there and I'm dealing with a whole human being and I'm partnering with a whole human being instead of just, you know, this automaton that either gets me what I want or doesn't.
Exactly. And I don't think that's our intention to see people that way. It's just the way that we can, that makes it, we're, this is protection. Okay. This is just like that. It helps us protect and be able to make sense of the situation. I always say this, it's like, people are just trying to get their needs met. And you can look at that person. It's like the same thing, but different empathy mapping. It's the same thing where like, what are they thinking? Are they feeling, you know, all that, where you're just tapping into centering that other person. I teach a whole methodology about how to do this in fundraising. We're not pitching. We're not selling. We're just listening, right? And try, listening to understand. I don't have to like it. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to agree with it. All I have to do is understand it and validate it. Once they feel validated, they're going to be more comfortable listening to what you have to say, but only until then. So our first inclination is to go in there. Like one of my clients, she just said, oh, my board president said that fundraising was all about facts and it's all about data. And she was like, what? And so our immediate intention is to change that person. And then you get defensive. And when you get defensive, they get defensive. And then we go into fight or flight. We are, if you can feel it in your body, your heart starts to race, your brain pounding, you know, whatever, this gone. It's gone. And you can't have, the dysregulation is reigning and you can't have a conversation. So I would say, like, what can I get the needs met? I just want to show this really quick. I had this situation. I don't want to say too much because it's about one of my kids. And I don't want to talk about, you know, there. Let's just say there was a legal matter we were dealing with. And I was in a court. And here's my kid. And he could be a hero. He could be a victim. Here, like, and I'm sitting in this courtroom. And I was sitting outside the courtroom and I was in a deep, like, I was just like, closed my eyes and I sent love to the judge, to the prosecutor, to the defense, to everybody in that room to have their needs met. What would it look like for everyone to come out and not to see it as win, lose, all, because this is juvenile. Anyway, like, and I, so when I had that energy, because I didn't, it's already tense enough, right? Like, and so what if everybody in that court said, and actually the judge who was presiding said something to the effect of that, like, our goal here is to help everybody move forward in the most positive way possible. Like, we're all actually working towards the same thing. And I just remember like really working on centering everyone else and that they also get to get their needs met. Right. Because the theory is if you win, I lose. I win, you lose. What does it look like that we all win? And I think that was like your first story about fundraising, getting back to that. Like, you know, when you're asking people to give you money, that's it. Everybody wins. Right. It's not like, oh, you give me money, you lose and I win because I get the money, which instills the guilt and shame. It's like you get to contribute and create the society that you want. And we get to do it. And like, this is a way for all of us to get our needs met, right? It's not, oh, you're going to get, I'm going to take something from you that doesn't meet your need in order to meet my need. That's, I think that's the underlying thought pattern that keeps us bound in that place of fear.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of the, I have a saying on the wall behind me that your listeners probably can't see, but it's charity is crossed out and there's impact instead. And I think that's what people, you know, you had a guest on recently who was talking about overcoming that scarcity mindset. We're the charity, we're everybody's garbage, we're everybody's trash. We do, you know, more with less, that kind of mindset, right? you know, a big part of overcoming that is you know, recognizing and believing in the impact that you're doing. And this is something, this kind of uses data to back into a kind of feelings approach. But, you know, one of the things I say about fear of fundraising is, you know, you're not crazy if you're afraid of fundraising. In some cases, your fear is actually justified. You know, there are a couple different fears around fundraising. I don't pretend to be the, you know, end all be all on that, but there's three different fears that I would identify. One is the fear I don't have anything good to offer. One is the fear of messing up the ask. What if I don't say the right thing? And another is the fear of no and the consequences of no. They're not just fearing no. They're also fearing like maybe they won't talk to me again, or maybe their family member is like, you know, we bring it up at the family drama, at the meeting, whatever. So some of these fears are actually pretty rational. You don't want to go into a conversation with someone and offer them something that's not good, because you don't want to be the person, even if they bought in, like, how would you feel? I mean, I'm offering something that I know is crap. And then they're like, they buy into it. Do you feel good? No, you're just like, no, I've just taken money from them to do this.
Yeah. So like, that's what I talk about. The difference between manipulation and influence. Influence is like, I wanted what I want. I don't care. I don't care about you. I just want to get something from you. And influence is like, hey, it meets both our needs, right? And I think because that's why it is so scary, because in our hearts, we want to do right by people. And if you don't think that's something that's, of course you're going to fear that. And you're right to say like, fear is just our brain working. You know what I mean? Like if we didn't fear anything, like, imagine we would just drive off a cliff. I mean, like, my goal is never to take away anything away. My goal is to help people navigate and understand it. Your fear is it's always going to be on the bus with you. It just doesn't get to drive, right? But it's coming along and you're here. Thank you so much, because it's keeping me hungry. It's keeping me humble. It's keeping me focused. It's keeping me learning. And also, I also know that you're going to sit here and my higher self is going to drive.
Exactly. And one of the big ways that you can do that, there's a couple of different ways. One of my favorite approaches to get people to ask for more money. So let's just talk about asking for more money. You know, so many people are asking for $100 or $200 or $50 or anything you can do. That's my favorite ask. Just anything you can do. So, so many people are asking for nowhere near what they're worth. And what I want them to do is I want them to either with their donors or by themselves, I want them to sit down and I want them to calculate the economic impact of what they do. Just give it a stab and calculate the economic impact of what they do. Because let's say my favorite example is a youth entrepreneurship organization, because it's a straight line to economic impact. So youth entrepreneurship organization, right? And let's say that you only help 100 young people a year. You're helping them start businesses. You had to help 100 young people a year go and start their own business. And you're terrible at it. And of those 100 young people, only 20 of them actually go and start businesses. Of the 20 that start businesses, only 2 of them actually create a business that hires 10 or more employees in your community. So out of 100 people, you have a 2% success rate. However, if they are businesses that have 10 or more employees, they're probably putting $5 to $10 million into the economy every year. For how many years? For 10, 20, 30, 40. Oh, wow. The number is going up. So now you've got, let's say, conservatively, you have $40 million of economic impact that you created with your organization because you got 2 young people out of your program to go be youth entrepreneurs. Why are you asking for $200? Right? Like, you need to believe in the work you're doing. People have asked me before, straight up on like a conference call or a panel or whatever, they're like, how do you overcome the fear of fundraising? And my answer is a little bit tough and it's a little bit brass tacks, but it's, if you don't believe that what you're doing is worth raising money for, get out of nonprofits, because there are a lot of people who do believe what they're doing is worth raising money for, and they should be getting that money. But if you can sit down, you can think about, and you and your board can think about, You don't have to do economic impact. I just find it's a great throughput to money. If you think about what is the actual impact of what we're doing here and what is that worth, you'll start asking for more money. You'll start talking to more people. You'll fix that little internal fact that your fear is based on. And then the fear is just talking to people and getting it done and getting it done and getting it done.
Right, right. It's like, I always talk about like, what's a better story we can tell, right? So the better story we can tell is the one of impact. And I think people are afraid sometimes that they're going to get challenged on that or whatever, which they typically aren't. People understand. I think in general, people understand, yes, economic impact. You are putting forth an honest, you know, not, I don't want to say guess, but an honest assessment of what your impact is. And that, oh, but, you know, I think sometimes it can be scary because then people are like, oh, is if it's not true or if we get it wrong, you know what I mean? Something like that. So they're going to keep the story small because they feel more comfortable playing the small game. And again, then you're going to make small asks and you're going to get small wins. And that story of like $40 million of economic impact, also it reframes the, because what's the success rate? Like that's a whole nother story because success doesn't, yes to them, there could have been so many more whose lives were changed or impacted or went on to do other things because of this, right? Just because they didn't achieve exactly what they set out to do, that doesn't mean there wasn't, they're not putting, you know, economic in the world. And I do feel like economic output or impact is, it's a nice, because it's money, right? So we're talking about apples, you know, right? And there's all so many ways to show impact. Just like there's so many ways to talk about donor loyalty rather than like how much you give. When we value people like how much they give, and then they're like, oh, there's always that little lady that gives $10 a month for 20 years. Yeah, why isn't her name on a plaque on the wall, right? Like, or like somebody that lives in, you know, like one of my clients is in North Carolina. She's in Anderson with Habitat, and like she got somebody from California who knew like it, like, oh, you could, like, there's so many ways that you can value relationship besides, oh, they give us the most so they get on the wall, right? There's long-term loyalty. There's people who show up for everything. You know what I mean? Like, they don't give a lot, but they show up for everything and they're your best cheer. Like, all, like, see what I'm like? All you have to do is decide, hey, but we're just playing by this rule. Let's just change the game. Let's just make it a different game. And then because we have to make it a different story or a different game to actually get different results, right? If you're going to tell the same story, you're going to get the same results. And I think that story, like, that is so powerful. Like, what is the economic impact? And instead of, hey, whatever you got is good, you know?
Right. Well, and whatever you got is, I won't go so far as to say it's disrespectful to donors, but it's not treating them like a partner. It's if I'm thinking of you as a partner, that's my second. I was looking up my 10 commandments of fundraising, and the third commandment is thou shalt view donors as partners. Why should we view donors as partners? Well, I was on a call with a big foundation a couple weeks ago, and you know, they're talking about the work that they do and why they're inspired to do what they do and stuff like that. And my client was talking about the work they did, and the foundation said something really interesting that I think every donor, particularly every major donor, believes, which is they said, we can't do the work ourselves, so we fund it. This is something I want people who are raising money to understand. Your donor wishes they were in your shoes. Person who is giving you money wishes they were on the front lines, wishes they were seeing that veteran transformed and overcome his PTSD, wishing they were seeing those women overcome domestic violence, wishing they were seeing the cancer survivors, and that they wish they were there. They wish they were making that impact, but they can't be due to time, due to energy, due to family, whatever. And so they're giving you money as a partner in what you're doing, but they want to be a partner with you. This is not, the money is just happens to be the thing they have that you don't, but they want to see the work that you're doing. They want to connect you with a volunteer. They want to connect you with a partner organization. They want to show up and be there and watch something happen. They're your partners. And when you understand that, you approach fundraising a bit differently. Instead of the majority of people's focus on fundraising, and I do teach a perfect donor pitch, but the majority of people's focus on fundraising is, hey, what's my pitch? What is my magic combination of words that's going to roll the dice and get the donors?
That perfect word that's going to wave the wand and the pocketbook opens.
Right, exactly, right? So most people want that. And yeah, there's some tweaks that you can do to that. And there's some really cool things you can do when you're pitching that do help. But really, what matters more is picking the right donor to actually talk to. And when you approach it as a partnership, you're not looking for that person to give you money. You're looking to see if that person is a good person to give you money. Do they align with the vision? Are they on board? Are they excited with what you're doing? And when you approach the first conversation that way, it takes all the pressure off. I'm not trying to get this person to give me money. I'm trying to see if this person is a good partner for me.
I say that all the time. Relationship first and the money will follow. And I'm here to build aligned relationships because there's a lot of ways that people can support you that may or may not have. It could be money. It could not. And is it, I call it the philanthropic heart. So you and I have, and about what we care about is not that magic combination or words. It's a pitch. It's our lived experience and how well, how our needs are reflected in what others are doing. Right. And as a potential donor, I'm evaluating that. Is this something I'm interested in? Is this something that has meaning for me? And then and it could be yes, it could be no, either way. And that's one of the things I coach people on too, is like, it's not about getting somebody to do something. It's creating a relationship. And if they fit, great. If not, let them go. And I think that's one of the things that people do. They hold on to everybody they meet because they're afraid to let them go, because they're afraid that I got to get this person to do it because I don't know where the next person is coming from. And they wind up spending a lot of time on people who are never going to do it, because they either don't want to hear the no, the person doesn't want to say the no because they're too polite. One of the things I teach people to do is the best way to get somebody to say yes is give them the ability to say no, right? Hey, I'm here to just connect with you. If it's good, yeah. If not, that's totally okay. Whatever you decide is totally okay. I'm here to help you make an empowered choice. If that's moving forward, great. If not, that's okay too. I want to help you do what's best for you. And people go, okay. I don't have to get anybody to do anything. It's amazing. It's so freeing, you know? It's just like, God. And it's so much more fun.
Believe it or not, but if you are sitting in a conversation, some people don't know how to like broach the topic of money with someone. And if they're sitting in a conversation with someone who you are evaluating as a potential partner for you in your organization, and it's not immediately obvious that money's on the table, so they're like an individual, they're not a foundation, whatever, the way you approach it is just be honest. Hey, I want to connect with you. I want to learn more about you and what your vision is for this community and see if we align. At the end of this process, I would like to ask you for money to support the organization if I think we're a good fit. Are you okay with that? And they will tell you, yes, I'm okay with that, or no, I'm not. And you eliminate that sinking feeling that you're sitting there talking to this person about everything except money, and you really want to talk to them about money, but you were honest with them and you got their permission to talk to them, knowing that there might be a monetary ask at the end if there's a fit. Treating your donors as a partner, someone who might actually want to be involved with you, is so key.
And you ask them for that. That's a term called micro commitment, where you're asking people for permission to move them through. If it's okay, I'd love to talk to you about this program that, from what you're telling me, sounds like it might be, you know, you might find really, you know, engaging or whatever. And they go, oh, yeah, sure. And they'll probably say yes. And it's okay. And I always say, I have no attachment. Whatever you decide is totally okay. Because sometimes they'll say yes because they don't want to disappoint you. So I train people like, because I want the honest answer. Because I don't need you to lie to me. You know what I'm saying? Because then we get into these situations I call them fantasy relationships, where now we're all just pretending because we don't know how to say no, because I'm too nice to say no and you don't want to hear it. So you're not, you know, and the round and round and round it goes, you know, oh, hit me up next month. And then next month, because they don't know how to say no, because they don't want to disappoint you. Saying no makes them feel uncharitable. It makes them, you know, and so I'm giving them permission. Like, if it's not the right fit, that's cool. If it is, let's talk about it. I love what you said. Like, at the end of this, if it makes sense, I'd love to talk to you about a gift. Would that be okay? You know, or at the end of this, I'd love to talk about a gift. We can decide then if that makes sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not sure either way, but I could play with that. But I call that a pre-frame. And that's what I train people to start conversations with, where you're actually throw up, hey, here's what I like to have happen. And then, so it gets people to relax into the conversation. Oh my God, this is so good. We should, we have to do a panel or something. Let's.
We did not get enough time here.
I know. We have to like submit an icon or something, because you and I could rule the world. I'm convinced. You know, I have to tell you, my background is marketing and communications. What I realized is, like, what was keeping people from really raising their profile and connecting with the right people wasn't the right message. It wasn't the right story. It wasn't the right brand. It was their ability to raise their standards and raise their profile and really ask, you know, stand in the value. And that's what you're really asking people to do, is stand in your value, right? Hold that value, hold that standard. When we raise our standards, people either rise to meet them or they'll fall away. And it starts with that individual, like I said, not just saying, oh, can you give me whatever you have? It's like, hey, we're worthy of investment. Big Brothers Big Sisters over in St. Louis, they were my client for a long time. And when I worked for this company called 501 Creative, and their fundraising was, they were $1,000 minimum investment. And they didn't do any events. They don't do galas, not like, they look for long-term investors and they started $1,000. And that was their whole focus. And because they held a standard, and you're like, well, what if it was 500? As soon as you lower that standard, resentment.
Yeah, I kind of want to speak to everyone who is in the nonprofit space right now and who has made it to the end of a podcast episode. Congratulations, you're in like the top 30% or whatever. But
this one was good. Everyone's staying in the end of this, even if they're at like two times speed, okay?
Yeah, I kind of want to speak to you guys because, you know, I come from politics. I'm a movement builder. That's what I did in politics. And my big thing is, how do we make the biggest impact on the largest number of people the fastest? And what I determine coming from politics is that nonprofits are that place. Why? Why? Because the vast majority of the problems that we face today are problems nonprofits are positioned uniquely to solve. Their homelessness, their lack of affordable health care, their lack of affordable mental health. There are issues where people who don't have the money to solve it themselves need someone else to help them and work with them to solve it. And those are the issues that the country cares about right now, that people in this country care about. You know how much bad news and awful news and chaos is regularly streamed on the news and is regularly out there, and how many people think that America's going in the wrong direction, all that stuff, and they're looking for another chance, another opportunity. You have so many people around you who just want to be a part of something good. And if you can raise your standards, to use your phrase, if you can raise your standards and realize that you as nonprofits, why we're called next level nonprofits, you as nonprofits are the vanguard of the greatest change in how we solve social issues and the greatest impact on the social issues we face today. Nonprofits are the vanguard for that. That's where the solutions are. And everyone around you, a lot of people around you, want to be a part of that. If you just raise that standard and you focus on those solutions and focus on getting the people around you to know what those are, you will find people who want to be a part of what you do, because nonprofits and impact is what people are looking for today, and they haven't found it elsewhere. They could find it with you.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Everyone gets to listen to that on repeat in the morning on the way to the office, right? Just dial that up, take your deep breath, go in there. And you're right. You know, we are often not valued because we don't make a profit. And yet by that, the lack of profit allows us to be uniquely positioned to solve most of the societal ills we face, and also create most of the joy, the art, the music, you know, all of that. Wow, this was amazing. Okay, Dan, now that we're fully and completely aligned and sort of 45 minutes later, the same person, if I'm ever in Raleigh, which is where you are, or here in St. Louis, and we're going to go out and sing karaoke, what is your go-to song?
What a Shame by Shinedown. I have a very deep voice, and I have an alternative.
Okay, I don't know if
background.
I know that song. I'm feeling old.
If it was a duet, I don't know. I also rap. Can you sing like Rihanna?
Yeah, I can sing Rihanna. Yeah, I'm a really good belter.
So we could do what's the Eminem Rihanna song?
Oh yeah.
It's the House is on Fire or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have rapped that at karaoke before.
There
so
you
we
go.
Could do that one.
It's a date. We're going.
Fantastic.
I did just apply for a speaking gig for the nonprofit, the Philanthropy Day or something in North Carolina. So
okay.
Maybe I'll be there. You never know. I'm set the attention.
I love that idea.
All right, Dan, awesome. This is amazing. And you mentioned something earlier, and we didn't really touch on it, but because you said you really help people with the first 250. And I imagine there's a lot of people who are like, hey, they're in that position or to help. So really quickly, like, just describe how you work with folks and then how people can get in touch with you.
Yeah. So there's three levels when you're 250 or under. There's 0 to 15, 15 to 50, and 50 to 250. And there's a different set of problems you're running into at each level. And I'm talking about sustainable. If you got a 20K gift and you haven't gotten a gift in 3 years, you're at 0 to 15. And so what I do is I help people build not just the fundraising piece, but the pieces around it that you need fundraising to work. You know, we work on, you know, clarifying your impact so that you can, you know, the economic analysis and the stuff we did on here, clarifying your impact so you can go out and you can ask for that money. We do that for nonprofits. They raise 5 times their amount that they raised in the next 6 months. Like that is, and that if it's that the only thing we do for nonprofits, they do that. It's crazy. So there are different challenges at each level, but my goal is to get you to wherever you're at to the next level in, you know, 90 days, 120 days, whatever, depending on where you're at, whatever we can get you there, and to do it in a way that you stay at that level. It's not, whoa, we got a 50K gift and now we're back down to 10, right?
Because sustainable.
If you don't have the network, if you don't have the media attention to keep that 50K gift and keep that moving, you're not going to. So my goal is everything that you thought you knew about just fundraising, let's add a couple pieces to that so it's actually sustainable. If you've struggled to break through the 15, the 50, or the 250K limit, let's get together, let's chat. I always give away far more than I probably should on my calls. So you know, jump on a call and I'll be happy to help.
All right. And so we'll put your contact info in the show notes. And are you on LinkedIn or where can people find you?
Yeah, I'm a millennial, so I eventually got on LinkedIn. So I'm technically there. You can send me a message there. But Facebook is my thing. So you can find me, Next Level Nonprofits. You can also find I'm posting 2 to 5 videos a week on my YouTube channel that are just like a 5-minute. Here's how to overcome one of your biggest challenges at your nonprofit. Check out that on Next Level Nonprofits on YouTube. And then, of course, my website, nextlevelnonprofits.us.
All right. Dan, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you for what you do. Thank you for really helping the people. There's not a lot of folks that help that work with these younger organizations. Well, that's really good work.
And thank you for helping me overcome my fear of doing cold contacts, because I was always a relationship builder and my business coach is like, you got to start cold contacting people. And I cold contacted you out of the blue and you did a beautiful thing and you responded and you had this podcast.
Well, so I feel like you should change your language, because I didn't consider it cold at all. Right. Like it's not, I mean, you're like, hey, I do this and you do this. Let's talk. Like it didn't feel, I feel like there's a better story in her there. Cause now I'm like in my head, I just seem like it's cold. Like, no, it's just like, it's a friend I haven't met yet. My friend Jim says I'm friends with the whole world. I just haven't met them all yet. But it's like, hey, it wasn't in the sense of like, you already knew there was some alignment. You did your homework. And I'm always looking for people that I can have, you know, that I can spotlight that are in alignment. So I appreciate it. It was great. Now we're friends forever.
Works for me.
All right. Okay. That's it for this episode of the Influential Nonprofit. As always, if you want to talk with me, my link is in the show notes. Please connect with me if you're interested in working on growing your influence and asking for what you want in a way that makes you feel it's joyful, easy, and sustainable. And we'll see you next time on the Influential Nonprofit.
Thanks for listening to the Influential Nonprofit with your host, Marianne Dersch. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends and colleagues about the podcast. Also, check out the influentialnonprofit.com for more resources on growing your influence so you can raise more and do more.